Last week, I was talking to my 10-year-old son about the 70s TV show Fantasy Island. I was telling him about Tattoo running out and yelling, "Deplane, deplane," to Ricardo Montalban, who is also of rich Corinthian leather and the Wrath of Khan fame. And my son looked completely puzzled. "It's a fantasy," I told him, and I said actors on the island were put in place to make some visitor's dream come true. "Oh," he said, "like Vegas." "Well, that's the myth of Las Vegas. Promoting the myth is how Vegas makes all its money. People come here thinking they're going to drop the housewife shtick and in a pencil skirt at some club be lavished with attention, or the plumber is going to don a tux, a wad of cash, and act like he's the king of the world. Or people think they'll drop a penny into a slot machine and become a millionaire. And I guess maybe that can happen. Me, though, that sounds kind of dull. Clubs and expensive table service and hours in front of a slot machine? Nah. But what if something like Fantasy Island were actually available? Or like Westworld, the 70s movie about a robotic fantasy amusement park where robots fill your every whim? There are other fantasies, too. Some people harbor fantasies of becoming sports stars. That one typically passes with age. There's a common fantasy among locals in Vegas, though, of wanting to stand out or to leave a mark, which seems easier in this town than it really is. But a lot of politicians seem to harbor those kinds of fantasies, and a lot of millionaires do too. Maybe at this moment we're even sitting amid one of those fantasies down here in the Beat Coffee Shop, which is independent but is in the middle of the Downtown Project's $350 million attempt to redevelop downtown Las Vegas. The redevelopment is moving ahead. It will be a few years, however, before we know if it's actually a vision of a do-over or if it gets relegated to the realm of fantasy, something that could never occur. There's another idea recently announced, however, that some might see as fantasy too. That is to build a massive sports arena downtown. Or is that something concrete, real, or necessary? We're going to talk about that in the second half of this, the Joe Downtown Show, brought to you by KUNV 91.5 FM, The Source. I'm Joe Shaneman, a columnist and reporter for the Las Vegas Weekly and Las Vegas Sun. The show airs Wednesdays at 9 p.m., but can also be found for eternity under Joe Downtown on the Las Vegas Sun website. That's the reality. But today we're here to talk about fantasy. More specifically, we're going to talk to you first about something called The Game. If you've ever seen the Michael Douglas movie of the same name, also starring Sean Penn, you might have an idea of what The Game is about. The Game is a relatively new business in Las Vegas that involves a multi-layered scheme to give people who come here the unexpected time of their lives. Now, I really don't want to attempt to explain that. For that, I have three people involved at the company, Justin Oswald, Sarah Johnson, and Chad Hardy. Welcome, you three.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So... So after I saw, and maybe everybody saw The Game in 1997, because the movie was enormously successful, I looked this up, $109 million worldwide, I remember thinking to myself, God, I wish that was real. I wish somebody would actually be able to pull that off, you know, where somebody would analyze the hell out of me, albeit under false pretenses, and create this elaborate, like, landscape that I would have to go through and not realize all this crazy stuff happening was just made up. So you tell me you're doing something like this in Las Vegas. Tell me what that's like. Tell me what it's like. I mean, I can't imagine you can actually do something like that.
Well, if I may, real quick, what it sounds like you want is you want to know that you're cared enough about to be with.
Well, I don't want to psychologically analyze myself, but I just want to know, or given enough money, could I do that to somebody else?
We here at The Game, actually, it's funny that you were talking to your 10-year-old about Fantasy Island. I mean, that we draw a lot from that show, and that it's all life, and it's all a fantasy, and it can all be done and recreated. And we just kind of take characteristics of our clients and our target and what they're doing here in Vegas, and we recreate real-life scenarios and make them personable to our client. So, I mean, I don't know if that was the best description of what actually goes on behind the scenes here, but we do make situations meaningful and make people peek up or make people understand that their subtlety exists and notice the subtle things and make that part of their life. You notice that?
Well, we'll get a little bit more into that. I'm going to draw that out of you a little more. But when did you start this? And give me a little bit about your backgrounds. What made you think about doing it, and what made you think you could do it?
We've been orchestrating events together, the three of us, in different variations for years together. And there's nothing else I enjoy more than getting disparate elements together and creating. Being entertained by them and seeing what happens, you know, and it's always a surprise to me, and it's always a surprise to the people I'm working with. And
yeah, so I mean, you take Las Vegas, right? And so this was a perfect stage or perfect backdrop for our business, because you know, any of these real life situations can, you know, happen every day.
The real life situations that you create.
Right. Well, so how you were talking about coming to Las Vegas and becoming a millionaire, or, you know, some far-fetched idea of people's ideas and perspectives of this town, or life, you know, and how they imagine themselves to be. And so we work with our clients and capture some of those details and then try to fold them into their night here as a guaranteed experience. And that usually comes across as a gift. So there's our client and a target, and the target is someone within the group. And I mean, you know, target has some kind of negative implications, but it also is something, you know, the target of, not of the joke, but of the scenario. Like he's the main character.
Yeah.
The recipient.
He's the recipient.
Just as in the movie.
Yeah. Just as in the movie.
So tell me about your background, Justin. Why this? How did you come to do this sort of thing?
In Las Vegas, and okay, let me think about this for a second. Why are we in Vegas?
what did you do before this?
So I worked in organizational development. I worked with many nonprofits and mostly in the fundraising arena. So we would go about putting together these large-scale events that ultimately we needed to have a takeaway that wasn't, you know, the chicken was bad. And so you look at these events and you say, okay, well, where can I insert these experiences or happenings that people come away with a story? And I mean, that's really what is important here at the game as well, is that there's this, people are buying a story. They're buying an experience. They're buying this, you know, when they come to Vegas, they're going to talk about it for the rest of their lives. You know, the bachelor party, like, let's go have this last wild time, right? And so we are folding in elements of their real life into this bachelor party and recreating moments that they could talk about forever.
What was the moment that, I should mention, the reason I'm interviewing them is that their office is downtown, sort of over by the courthouse. But what was the moment at which you thought, oh, this, we're going to do this game thing? Had you just seen it in other cities and then decided to do it here? Or, I mean, how did the idea even come about?
I mean, it was a natural development of what we had all done in this kind of idea of performance art and bringing it to the general public and coming down here and seeing, you know, people wanting more. They always want, as you said in the beginning of the show, to feel like, to feel special, to come away with a special story. And I thought there's this gap that's not being filled. You know, they go to this club, they're always looking for this crazy experience. And really, I mean, you can find it in Las Vegas, and we guarantee that experience. So I think that, I mean, Vegas specifically is a perfect backdrop because people are always coming here looking for that, you know, the show. And we offer them their dreams.
Chad, you know, Chad has a background in corporate team building, so that's his background. He brings a bunch of adults together that, you know, are doing this, trying to build a community out of these, you know, traditional workplaces. You know, that's what he does.
So you understand group dynamics.
Exactly. So he comes from working with large groups of business-oriented folks that are locked in their office all day, you know? And so there's...
Sorry, there's somebody outside the window. Just life's rich pageant here outside the Beat, you know, Coffee House downtown.
So, yeah, so that's Chad outside talking to, I don't know.
So he recreates these moments and brings people together, right?
So he understood that aspect of it.
And he understands the show. I mean, he can book and program any kind of theatrical event, and that's where his strengths lies, really kind of
traditional theatrics too. Like, he loves Disneyland. This is like, he is like a very traditional theater person, like, so like just a real front man, a real showman, you know. So that's where he comes in. Like, that's this incredible dynamic, you know. And then Justin has an arts, you know, his dynamic is this performance in a contemporary art world, you know. And it's and so it's this, you know, this beautiful combination of two different showmen coming from two different fields. You know?
And you, tell me about your background.
Well, Sarah just came from New York to join the team. And she was performance theory out of NYU. And I mean, that really is, you know, our focus is this.
Performance theory?
Performance theory, yeah. Yeah.
You were teaching that?
No, studying.
Oh, studying performance theory. What exactly is that, really quickly?
I would say that's the questions you're asking now are what we're talking about now and what we're doing here. So it's understanding contemporary, or for me, what I was doing is trying to understand contemporary life through the idea of performance. You know, what does that mean? When does a performance start, and when does it stop, and what is it? And how hung up do I want to get on those questions?
So when they came to you with the idea, or you all thought about it, did any of you say, this is just crazy?
I said, there's no way I'm moving to Vegas. I said, absolutely not. I said, there's nothing I'd rather do, but there's no way I'm moving to Vegas. And then I got out here, and so right now there's a woman changing in front of the window, you know, for instance, like, we're on Fremont Street. And I've been watching this woman read tarot to my other partner, who's on the phone with Johnson & Johnson, you know, doing corporate team building, you know, and while we're doing this interview. And I was in New York, completely overwhelmed with these brilliant people that knew just exactly the ways that they wanted to think and get across about every element of their life. And I moved here, and I'm surrounded by eccentricity, and I'm surrounded by some sort of old world, do you see this? Some sort of old world charm. But by old world, I mean like some specifically American old world charm, which is not very old at all. So we're just all these like renegade, like kind of lost, like lost folks wondering around, what are we all in this city for? And I love it because nobody knows.
She's laughing because the woman who just got dressed is now doing some kind of dance moves and in her own world. But
I mean, that is a perfect example of what we take from Las Vegas. I mean, coming to this town and the rich history and traditions, there's so much icons to pull from and recreate. And then people have so many ideas about what exists in this town. And so you can pull from, you know, like your background, this rich crime history that Vegas has. We can recreate any kind of mob scene. You know, we can recreate a bounty hunter scenario. We can recreate all these things that are grained in people's imagination about what exists here in this town. And you know, you walk down the street and you're encountered with, you know, contemporary dance or the buskers or the Elvis, right? And I mean, all those things are so easy to wrap into someone's experience here and make it, you know.
They're already here. It's so tender. I mean, it's already here. It's not hiring actors. It's like, oh my God, this is incredible. I met three incredible Elvises yesterday of different generations that love what they're doing and love it here. You know, it's incredible. It's folding in. Like, I really feel like it's a folding in of the city and everything here. And maybe not even so strong as like curating it, just absorbing it, you know?
So let's talk about the game itself. So what do you do to prepare? Like, somebody calls you and he says, I want to do, well, can you give me an example? You gave me an example when we talked before the radio show. I wonder if you can talk about that one again.
Yeah, I mean, there's several different levels to our business. And, you know, we wanted to make it accessible to the general public because this is something that can be done relatively easy. And I think that having a relationship with your client and getting to know them and getting to know what they want is the first step. And I mean, so really we're on the phone and doing this intake process, and there's a list of questions that we ask our client to gather information about them and find out what they're doing here in Las Vegas. And then we construct a script that fits their needs and what their desired outcome would be.
How long is the questionnaire? Is it
as long as we can make it? I mean,
very detailed.
Yeah,
You know, it depends on the game, on which game they choose. I mean, it can be a one-off that's a 20-minute encounter all the way lasting through a week. You know, that was, I think the longest one we've done now was a 5-day prank where, you know, you introduce an actor into someone's Las Vegas experience right from the get-go, from the airport pickup. You know, we orchestrate the limo ride and have them pick someone up, or we have, you know, our driver deliver some sort of information that's pertinent to them later in the game. So it's kind of this reoccurring joke that happens throughout their time in Las Vegas. And it can develop into something as personal as like a mistaken identity where, you know, you go and, you know, encounter someone from your past that you can't recollect, but they know pertinent information about, you know, your development, and they're like, well, wait a second, like, who is this, or what's going on?
And how do they know me? Yeah,
it's just kind of the sustained disbelief that is created through this script that's really intriguing to the client. And you know, and everybody ends with a good laugh and aha moment at the end of the week or the end of the experience. Some people, you know, emotions ran wild. Like, some people were saying, this is so incredible, what a great experience. And some people were just trying to wrap their head around their altered reality and like this blurred line between, you know, fiction and reality that we really strive to create.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you three. We're going to wrap this up, move on to this next part of the show. But this has been the Joe Downtown Show at KUNV 91.5 FM, The Source. For the second half of our show, we're going to talk about something that Las Vegas residents have long thought of as fantasy. Yet, earlier today, the Las Vegas City Council actually thought about doing it in earnest. The show was taped beforehand, so we don't know the results of that meeting just yet. But what they were considering is a proposal to keep working with a company called Cordish Companies to develop a nearly $400 million arena downtown, presumably in Symphony Park. These are some of the details. Cordish would contribute $151 million, which is about 37% of the total. The city would contribute $240 million, with nearly $190 million of that coming from city-backed bonds. The other $52 million would come from a special tax on downtown businesses like the one I'm sitting in right now, the Beat Coffee House. The deal outlined in city documents that are online also propose that the city would be paid back its portion of the stadium before Cordish, and it would then own the arena. And first, a feasibility study would be completed. Now, to talk to me about this potential fantasy today is City Councilman Bob Beers, who is known as a fiscal conservative and not prone to flights of fancy, and Terry Murphy, president of the Downtown Las Vegas Alliance, a consortium of business operators downtown. Welcome, you two.
Thanks, Joe.
And thanks, Joe.
So, boy, I got to say, this sounds like what? This arena, a legacy project, or some might say a potential white elephant?
You know, in the 80s and the 90s and the first half of the 2000s, it was pretty popular for cities to buy stadiums, pay for stadiums. They have a little bit of a open for discussion record of effectiveness. The pro side believes that having that stadium will spur economic development in the area around it, and the con side says that it actually doesn't spur any economic development. It just splits people's existing entertainment budget a little thinner.
Well, I want to get into that in a second. But first, I got to ask the most important question, the one that's going to raise the hackles of most people down here, and that is for Terry. Do downtown business owners who are being characterized, I think, as the big beneficiaries of an arena because it could drive potential customers downtown, are they all a-Twitter over the idea, just jumping with excitement at the $52 million business tax?
They are all a-Twitter and jumping with excitement, but not in the way that you would think. They are all a-Twitter in that they found out about it from the RJ this morning, and that it's going to be decided upon next Wednesday. So they're lacking a good bit of information. They've also been talking about, for the last 6 or 8 months, creating a business improvement district for other purposes, such as keeping the streets clean and safe, and perhaps some sort of downtown circulator transportation projects. We haven't gotten very far along in those discussions, and nobody's certainly voted to tax themselves just yet. But I think what I'm hearing is a whole lot more questions than answers, and I think they're actually quite fearful that there's not enough time to get those answers before the matter is voted on.
Well, that's typical local politics,
let me,
right?
Let me throw in a couple things. We're not deciding whether we're going to have a stadium.
But a feasibility study.
Essentially, what's happened is that the Cordish companies had a contract with the city whereby the city was not allowed to talk to anybody else about a stadium or that parcel in Symphony Park. In exchange, they gave us a few tens of thousands of dollars of earnest money. And that contract, which precludes us from shopping elsewhere, expires at the end of this month. What's being proposed for next week's council agenda is essentially an extension of that contract for 9 months. Now, one might argue, look, they haven't got off the dime yet. Are they going to get off the dime in the next 9 months? Is this now an appropriate time?
Do your business or get off the pot,
right,
as they say.
Is this now the time when the city should look at other alternatives for that land and hear other ideas? Those are the difficult questions that are going to be behind the vote next week, I think.
Now, Bob, let me give you this long question, which really begins with, why does the city need an arena? And I only ask this because 7 years ago when Project Neon, a pie-in-the-sky arena, casino, hotel, retail project was proposed downtown, the thing pushing it was redevelopment, that it would stimulate downtown and bring about a renaissance. But that's already happening. Businesses are already moving in smaller and quainter than a UFO-shaped arena, but they're diverse and, some could argue, contribute to a more stable economy than a massive project like this one. Is this just the city trying to fulfill former Mayor Oscar Goodman's dream?
No, it's not. The city has invested 100 million dollars and invested it in streets, electrical service, curbs, gutters, sidewalks in Symphony Park. This was borrowed on a short-term basis based on the thought that we would sell lots quickly and be able to take the proceeds from those developed lots and pay off this loan. Of course, no lots were sold, essentially, after the first couple, and that debt was recalled by the lender in 2013, and the city had to go scramble and find another place to borrow it at a higher interest rate. So the city is sitting on a huge investment in the bare land at Symphony Park, and rightly has a strong interest in seeing that land get sold, both because of the development that will happen and because we need to pay this money back and get out from under the interest payments.
Well, let me ask you this.
So that's part of what the city's thinking.
As part of the agreement, the city would own the arena. Let me put this to you. Why not let Cordish own it, but just contribute more on the front end, make the city's bond smaller? Because who wants to own an arena if it potentially could fail because MGM is building their own arena and they're not getting any tax dollars?
So let's talk about the financing. There's a piece of it that will be a new tax for surrounding businesses. My first question was, can I see that map so I can understand what the district is that you're planning on assessing the new tax? And the answer was, well, we don't have that detail worked out yet. We'll get that. So we have to wait to see what that's going to look like. And then there's a sales tax piece of it that's going to be pulled away from other governmental activities and redirected to paying debt on the bond, assuming that you actually generate enough sales tax from that neighborhood to make that happen. And then Cordish's component. Now, let's talk about Cordish's component. Thus far, it does not look like Cordish has even one signed contract for a corporate box. That's typically a key funding point for operations. These are people, companies typically, that will pay 10, 20, 30, 40, however high the market can drive it, for their own box in the arena. We don't have any of those. We don't have a sports team. As far as our ability to pack it, we have a consultancy study that says we'll have enough revenue to pay everything, but that study, it's my understanding, basically says we'll take all of Thomas and Mac's business at Thomas and Mac's current rates.
And if we tried to take
any of Thomas and Mac's business, prices would fall for arenas, and so I'm a little concerned that the revenue model is not realistic.
Let me just say, every feasibility model I've ever seen any government do always says it's going to work just fine.
Well, all consultants start their engagement by asking their client what they'd like them to conclude.
I totally believe that. Terry's a consultant, so Terry's that much. I don't...
She's not that kind of a consultant.
No, I know that. So... there's competition, too, with the MGM. It just seems like a very odd thing that just came out of the blue, like you said, suddenly, when there's so many other groups talking about arenas. Why now? Is it just because there's a week left? Did they just... I mean, what's going on?
I'll be here tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Yeah. You can answer it? Okay.
Well,
yeah,
Bob's going.
It's because their contract expires at the end of the month, and they lose their exclusive right. They probably should have restarted this process of taking a serious look at this before 6 weeks before the contract expired, because it is a big bite to take and chew on, and it's got to be thought about by a lot of different people in a lot of different walks of life. So recognizing that they restarted too late, what's being proposed is that we just give them another 9-month extension of this contract.
Let me take their side of it. You know, you don't have anything else going in there, so why not?
We don't have anything else going in there because we haven't been able to talk to anybody for about 5 years about any of those parcels. They're all under that kind of an exclusive development agreement.
Could you do an agreement where you can talk to other people while they're working out these details?
They would not like that, so they might not be party of it.
Do you care if they like it or not, given that they've had all these years?
You're asking my thoughts on the
whole
matter?
Yeah, I'm asking your thoughts.
Yeah, my thoughts on the whole matter are that they've had an opportunity and nothing's happening. And the key components I'm looking for is a functional revenue forecast. I don't think we have that yet. I'm looking for some sign that they actually have this money. Some people at the city say, well, they're a private company. Of course they have that money. But in fact, not every private company is loaded. And so we don't know that they have that money. I know that most real estate developers, in fact, don't use their own money to develop. They get contracts with people who want to be tenants. They take those contracts out to very wealthy people and say, here's what can happen if you fund my project. We'll be able to charge these people this rent and it all pencils. What do you think? And they get a check. Well, they haven't shown us those contracts yet, so we don't know if they have it.
Oh, so let me just ask this one question to both of you. Fantasy or reality?
Remains to be seen. After 3 years, and now we're just to the point of starting to study how to pay for it, and, you know, are there going to be naming rights? Are there going to be boxes sold? I spent probably 2,500 hours working on another proposal that didn't move forward. And in terms of the step-by-step process of how we analyze that, this looks different.
Well, I know what they could do. Let's say at the end of 9 months they don't have it. Well, you just give them another exclusive negotiating agreement.
Well, the other thing is, and Bob sort of raised this, but there are other property owners on Symphony Park who have been stalled. They can't decide what they're going to do with their property until they know what's going to be next to them. And so they are kind of in limbo. And the longer they're in limbo, the more market changes that occur. They can't recruit tenants. They're basically at a standstill. So should we extend this contract? You know, I don't know enough about it. Again, we just learned about it last night. Everybody is quite nervous about what they're hearing. And so I think that they have to learn more about what the real plan is. There don't seem to be a great amount of details about.
I'm going to take a guess. I guess Bob's going to vote no about it. You're going to come in from the business owner's perspective downtown and say we don't like it. And that's how we're going to have to wrap this up, because we ran out of time. This is the Joe Downtown Show. I'm Joe Shaneman, a writer and columnist for Las Vegas Weekly and Las Vegas Sun. Thanks for listening.